You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Henat Baba. Last December in Sudan, people began a revolt against the brutal 30-year rule of dictator Omar al-Bashir. The world saw the protests live, many going blue for Sudan on their social media feeds. Sudanese around the world protested. In the Bay Area, there were protests in San Francisco and weekly rallies at Oakland's Lake Merritt. One of the first people to call for change in Sudan back in December is a 30-year-old doctor named Mohamed Naji Al-Assam. He co-founded a body called the Sudanese Professionals Association. They started organizing protests. He got jailed and beaten, but continued mobilizing masses through social media until the regime finally fell in April. Dr. Al-Assam recently visited the Bay Area to meet with local Sudanese about how they can help build up the country while living thousands of miles away. And he joined me in studio. Welcome to San Francisco.
Thank you.
We are an NPR station, National Public Radio, and my colleague Ader Peralta was in Sudan,
yes.
And we all got to hear the very uncomfortable story of how he got to talk to you.
Yeah, it was very
It was
weird.
Secretive, and it was, you know, it was very suspenseful. Let's hear a clip from that.
But tonight, it's close to midnight, and he finally agrees to meet at a parking lot in front of a furniture store in Khartoum. One of his guys tells me to get out of my car and into a beat-up Toyota Corolla.
You just be in the car with him, or be in the
Okay, come this way, please.
Al-Assam is at the wheel. The car is on in case we have to flee. And the first thing I ask is, why all this mystery?
So that's NPR's Ader Peralta in Sudan with you, my guest, Dr. Mohamed Naji Al-Assam. How risky was it for you to talk to a journalist?
Yeah, it was the exact situation back then. That was after the massacre of 3rd of June. Things were very uncertain. No one actually knew what is what will happen in the following days. And we had no internet. We lost touch with each other, the SBA, the FFC. So we were basically dispersed all around Sudan, and people... some of us started hiding again.
Despite the fact that al-Bashir fell.
Yeah.
Like, that was the goal, and it happened, but still you were having to hide. Why?
Yeah, because things were not actually certain that at that time. Because, you know, the disperse of the sit-in at the 3rd of June.
So the 3rd of June is known as the Khartoum Massacre.
The Khartoum Massacre. It happened after al-Bashir fell.
Right.
And the TMC was responsible for it definitely at that time.
The Transitional Military Council.
Yeah, Transitional Military Council, because it was the body in power.
Right.
So we thought that now they will crack down again everything. They will start, and yeah, basically they arrested some of us. And of course, a lot of our people we knew have been killed through the disperse of the sitting. So it was very difficult days. People were full of depression, were full of frustration. But now, with some time passing by, again, we started to keep up, to start again building the momentum.
So after the Khartoum massacre, June 3rd, there was, like you said, people were sad, people were depressed. There was a lot of bloodshed. People missing until this day, you know. Bodies are found all the time. And people wonder, what keeps you going? What keeps people continuing to want to protest, even when you're met with that kind of brutality that happened on June 3rd? What is it?
I believe this new generation is the key of all of what we are seeing now in Sudan. The youth power, actually, is what is behind everything that has happened in Sudan in the past 9 or 10 months. And their power still is the key for everything happening in Sudan. And hopefully that will happen in the future. That's why we are talking now about keeping these youth actively engaging in the political scene in Sudan. And of course, the number one factor is the unity. We also how the Sudanese people united inside and outside Sudan around the revolution, around the goals and the demands of the revolution. And from each other, we could find our strength. We could again regain our hope and get out of our depression and frustration. And it is also the key to continue this process of change. Change is not just something that could happen by day and night. We are speaking about 30 years of dictatorship, and we need a lot of time to get out of it and to build the Sudan that we want, that we all are eager for. Mm. One of the major challenges that we faced after the 3rd of June was to commit to the peaceful ways, to remain peaceful and to remain committed to the nonviolent strategies.
Which is hard after
it was,
what happened.
Yeah, it was very difficult. And we went sitting with the different youth committees, convincing them that we should not turn this violent, and this is not the answer, and this actually cannot unite us if we turn violent. Mm. And if we did all that, nothing can actually stand in our way.
But did you really believe that? Because I think that was a point when people were starting to mistrust the military, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you trust the military? Did you trust it at that time?
No, definitely not.
Mm.
It's not like me personally not trusting the military. The history says that we should not trust the military, because every time we had a collapse of democracy, the military would be behind it throughout the history of Sudan. That's why it's not about trust. It's about us wanting something and reaching it and working towards it, and then guarding this whole process of change.
You know, the big question I get asked by my American colleagues here is, okay, your people overthrew the military, a military dictatorship, but there's still military right now. And it's confusing for people. It's been a point of criticism also, I think, as to why the new government includes military, and not just military, but people here in the Bay Area back in 2003, 2004, they were following the Darfur crisis, they were going out for Save Darfur protests. And so for the current regime to include someone like Mohamed Hamdan Daglo of the Rapid Defense Forces, people here know that as the Janjaweed, it's confusing to people as to how is this a big change if these people are still here.
Okay, basically our goal was to have a civilian-led government in Sudan. And by that we mean a government that has all the executive power, that can do all the goals and demands and the plans to establish and to pave the way for a sustainable democracy that can come after 3 years.
Mm.
In Sudan, you cannot just simply take, by day and night, take the military or the armed groups out of the equation. You can't just simply do that, because they were in every and each part of the structural system in Sudan throughout the 30 years of al-Bashir regime.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not simple just to take them completely out of the way. Now we have a constitutional declaration that exactly entitled every and each job and every and each objective of each structure of the government, and with all the executive power under the hands and the control of the cabinet headed by Mr. Prime Minister Dr. Abdullah Hamdok.
So this is March 30th, downtown San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
couple of miles
mm-hmm.
from here.
Mm-hmm.
Sudanese community in the Bay Area shut down San Francisco, downtown San Francisco, with the protests.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in Sudan and you see videos coming in from really all over the world.
Yes.
How do you feel? Like, what is that to you?
The unity of the Sudanese people was the main factor in the success of all of this. The Sudanese diaspora, of course, in the U.S. and all around the world, have played a huge role in supporting the Sudanese revolution, physically and psychologically by every means, in the media. We all remember Blue for Sudan when we had no internet connection inside Sudan. Sudanese diaspora were actually the voices of Sudan, of what is going on in Sudan. So we have to stick to all of that to actually go through this very difficult 3 years and then beyond as well, because even the democracy itself will be very difficult, because it's a democracy after 33 decades of dictatorship. It will not be easy.
And what do you think the specific role of the diaspora can be? I mean, we've been, the Sudanese diaspora has been supporting, you know, with the protests, politically as well, people writing their congresspeople, people going to their congresspeople. I was walking outside of a San Francisco theater and there were stickers on the wall just in San Francisco, say, you know, stand with Sudan. And you're here to meet also with professionals. You're meeting, I think, with local doctors mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. engineers. So what role do you think diasporans can play? Are you here to convince people to go back or what?
Not actually convincing them to go back, but they can help in it in basically everything in Sudan. The civil service in Sudan is basically collapsed. Mm. We have the previous government has had no strategies, no plans, nothing at all, and we need to now reestablish or actually establish the plans and the different ways to lift the situation in Sudan and to build and to start putting Sudan in the track of change. Mm. And of course, the experiences of the Sudanese in the diaspora, as well as the Sudanese here in the US, of course, would be very helpful. And they are not waiting for me actually to say that to them. They have actually started doing that a long time ago. And from here, shout out to SAPA, my Sudanese Association of Physicians here in the US. They have, from, I believe, April, started working with the other Sudanese associations of medical doctors inside Sudan and around the world. And now they have what we call SAHA. SAHA is the some sort of the policy of how to build and establish the whole health system in Sudan mm. from scratch.
How can you build trust? Because, you know, I can tell you some people would love to go back to Sudan and do a project, make some kind of thing, but there's a worry that I might go and start something in Sudan in this 3 years, and then what if something happens? How do you give people the confidence to, you know, go and start, you know, a startup, for example, in Khartoum?
Mm-hmm. So, as I said, change is a process. And one of the things that we all should start doing is to practice this change and to actually start doing things. And of course, things will happen. Challenges will face this project of change. But you cannot know what are the challenges and what do we need to fix and what do we need to modify without actually practicing and starting doing things in Sudan. So now we have the government that Sudanese people we're all eager for. We have the rights in the Bill of Rights, in the Constitutional Declaration. We have the written papers ready, and we need to start practicing this change.
You bring a message of hope, but what are your fears in these 3 years? You have to have some.
Of course, a lot of fears, and they are basically more of challenges, I believe, we will face. Losing this unity is basically the most thing that I believe each and every one of us fear the most. Because if we are not united anymore, we are not working together collectively, we will not be able to face any of the challenges that are definitely are going to face us.
And do you think that's a possibility? Do you see that happening?
Yeah, of course it could happen if we did not do our job, if we didn't do what we should do in keeping us united. We definitely can lose this unity, and it will be the worst case scenario.
Okay. Dr. Al-Assam, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.